The scientist who made this identification was von Grotthus. Thus, he had appealed to the god chemical analysis. Or the power and glory of mankind with which we're not always so impressed, but the gods must tell us what we want them to tell us. We see again that, though nothing has identity of its own, anything can be identified as anything. Or there's nothing that's not reasonable, if one snoopeth not into its exclusions. But here the conflict did not end. Berzelius examined the substance. He could not find nickel in it. At that time, the presence of nickel was the positive test of meteoritic matter. Whereupon, with a supposititious positive standard of judgment against him, von Grotthus revoked his identification. Annals and Mag of Nat History, 1-3-185. This equalization of eminences permits us to project with our own expression, which, otherwise, would be subdued into invisibility. That it's too bad that no one ever looked to see hieroglyphics, something written upon these sheets of paper? If we have no very great variety of substances that have fallen to this earth, if, upon this earth's surface there is infinite variety of substances detachable by whirlwinds, two falls of such a rare substance as marsh paper would be remarkable. A writer in the Edinburgh Review, 87-194, says that, at the time of writing, he had before him a portion of a sheet of 200 square feet, of a substance that had fallen at Carolath, Silesia, in 1839 exactly similar to cotton felt, of which clothing might have been made. The god microscopic examination had spoken. The substance consisted chiefly of Kona ferveo. Jure. Asiatic SOC of Bengal, 1847 pt. I-193. That March 16, 1846, about the time of a fall of edible substance in Asia Minor, an olive gray powder fell at Shanghai. Under the microscope, it was seen to be an aggregation of hairs of two kinds, black ones and rather thick white ones. They were supposed to be mineral fibers, but, when burned, they gave out the common ammoniacal smell and smoke of burnt hair or feathers. The writer described the phenomenon as a cloud of 3,800 square miles of fibers, alkali, and sand. In a postscript, he says that other investigators, with more powerful microscopes, gave opinion that the fibers were not hairs, that the substance consisted chiefly of Kona ferveo. Or the pathos of it, perhaps, or the dull and uninspired, but courageous persistence of the scientific, everything seemingly found out is doomed to be subverted by more powerful microscopes and telescopes, by more refined, precise, searching means and methods, the new pronouncements irrepressibly bobbing up, their reception always as truth at last, always the illusion of the final, very little of the intermediatist spirit. That the new that has displaced the old will itself someday be displaced, that it, too, will be recognized as myth stuff. But that if phantoms climb, spooks of ladders are good enough for them. Annual Register, 1821-681. That, according to a report by M. Lane, French consul at Pernambuco, early in October, 1821, there was a shower of a substance resembling silk. The quantity was as tremendous as might be a whole cargo, lost somewhere between Jupiter and Mars, having drifted around perhaps for centuries, the original fabric slowly disintegrating. In Annals de Chimie, 2-15-427, it is said that samples of this substance were sent to France by M. Lane, and that they proved to have some resemblances to silky filaments which, at certain times of the year, are carried by the wind near Paris. In the Annals of Philosophy, N.S., 12-93, there is mention of a fibrous substance like blue silk that fell near Naumburg, March 23, 1665. According to Cladny, Annals de Chimie, 231-264, the quantity was great. He places a question mark before the date. One of the advantages of intermediatism is that, in the oneness of quasiness, there can be no mixed metaphors. Whatever is acceptable of anything, is, in some degree or aspect, acceptable of everything. So it is quite proper to speak, for instance, of something that is as firm as a rock and that sails in a majestic march. The Irish are good monists, they have of course been laughed at for their keener perceptions. So it's a book we're writing, or it's a procession, or it's a museum, with the Chamber of Horrors rather overemphasized. A rather horrible correlation occurs in the Scientific American, 1859-178. What interests us is that a correspondent saw a silky substance fall from the sky. There was an aurora borealis at the time. He attributes the substance to the aurora. Since the time of Darwin, the classic explanation has been that all silky substances that fall from the sky are spider webs. In 1832, aboard the Beagle, at the mouth of La Plata River, 60 miles from land, Darwin saw an enormous number of spiders, of the kind usually known as gossamer spiders, little aeronauts that cast out filaments by which the wind carries them. It's difficult to express that silky substances that have fallen to this earth were not spider webs. My own acceptance is that spider webs are the merger, that there have been falls of an externally derived silky substance, and also of the webs, or strands, rather, of aeronautic spiders indigenous to this earth, that in some instances it is impossible to distinguish one from the other. Of course, our expression upon silky substances will merge away into expressions upon other seeming textile substances, and I don't know how much better off we'll be. Except that, if fabricable materials have fallen from the sky, simply to establish acceptance of that may be doing well enough in this book of first and tentative explorations. In All the Year Round, 8-254, is described a fall that took place in England, September 21, 1741, in the towns of Bradley, Selborne, and Alresford, and in a triangular space included by these three towns. The substance is described as cobwebs, but it fell in flake formation, or in flakes or rags about 1 inch broad and 5 or 6 inches long. Also, these flakes were of a relatively heavy substance. They fell with some velocity. The quantity was great. The shortest side of the triangular space is 8 miles long. In the Wernerian Nat. Hist. Soc. Transaction, 5-386, it is said that there were two falls, that they were some hours apart, a datum that is becoming familiar to us, a datum that cannot be taken into the fold, unless we find it repeated over and over and over again. It is said that the second fall lasted from 9 o'clock in the morning until night. Now the hypnosis of the classic that what we call intelligence is only an expression of an equilibrium, that when mental adjustments are made, intelligence ceases, or, of course, that intelligence is the confession of ignorance. If you have intelligence upon any subject, that is something you're still learning. If we agree that that which is learned is always mechanically done in quasi terms, of course, because nothing is ever finally learned. It was decided that this substance was spider's web. That was adjustment. But it's not adjustment to me, so I'm afraid I shall have some intelligence in this matter. If I ever arrive at adjustment upon this subject, then, upon this subject, I shall be able to have no thoughts, except routine thoughts. I haven't yet quite decided absolutely everything, so I am able to point out that this substance was of quantity so enormous that it attracted wide attention when it came down. That it would have been equally noteworthy when it went up. That there is no record of anyone, in England or elsewhere, having seen tons of spider webs going up, September, 1741. Further confession of intelligence upon my part. That, if it be contested, then, that the place of origin may have been far away, but still terrestrial. Then it's that other familiar matter of incredible marksmanship again hitting a small, triangular space for hours, interval of hours, then from 9 in the morning until night, same small triangular space. These are the disregards of the classic explanation. There is no mention of spiders having been seen to fall, but a good inclusion is that, though this substance fell in good-sized flakes of considerable weight, it was viscous. In this respect it was like cobwebs, dogs nosing it on grass, were blindfolded with it. This circumstance does strongly suggest cobwebs. Unless we can accept that, in regions aloft, there are vast viscous or gelatinous areas, and that things passing through become daubed. Or perhaps we clear up the confusion in the descriptions of the substance that fell in 1841 and 1846, in Asia Minor, described in one publication as gelatinous, and in another as a cereal, that it was a cereal that had passed through a gelatinous region. That the paper-like substance of Memel may have had such an experience may be indicated in that Ehrenberg found in it gelatinous matter, which he called Nostoc. Annals and Mag of Nat. History, 1-3-185. Scientific American, 45-337. Fall of a substance described as cobwebs, latter part of October, 1881, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and other towns. Other towns mentioned are Green Bay, Vesperge, Fort Howard, Sheboygan, and Ozaukee. The aeronautic spiders are known as gossamer spiders, because of the extreme lightness of the filaments that they cast out to the wind. Of the substance that fell in Wisconsin, it is said, in all instances the webs were strong in texture and very white. The editor says, curiously enough, there is no mention in any of the reports that we have seen, of the presence of spiders. So our attempt to divorce a possible external product from its terrestrial merger, then our joy of the prospector who thinks he's found something. The Monthly Weather Review, 26-566, quotes the Montgomery, Ala, Advertiser, that, upon November 21, 1898, numerous batches of spider web-like substance fell in Montgomery, in strands and in occasional masses several inches long and several inches broad. According to the writer, it was not spider's web, but something like asbestos, also that it was phosphorescent.